Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
If you're standing, please hold on to the handrails and stay clear of the automatic doors. They will be closing in a moment. Thank you.
Welcome, listeners, to another exciting episode of Monorail Tales. If this is your first time joining us, I bid you a heartfelt welcome. And if you are a returning listener, thank you for joining us again. Tonight, everybody, my co-host is the amazing and fabulous Sheila. Hello, Sheila.
Hey, how you doing, Al?
I am doing fantastic. Well, listeners, you're in for a real treat tonight, because joining us tonight on this podcast is published author, Disney enthusiast, and former cast member at the flagship Disney store in New York City, Times Square, store 777, where we became great friends, Alyssa Donahue. Hello, Alyssa.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome. Well, I guess we have to say, in our store in 777, we started it with a cast member named Fredwin, and right? And he would, anybody who's kind of like a Disney, kind of like a Walt or someone respected or whatever, we would always call uncle. So that's why Alyssa called me uncle, and I could, you know, this was our little thing there. But welcome, Alyssa. Welcome to Monorail Tales. We're so happy to have you on.
I'm happy to be here. Yeah, we had our little code names, and also for the Disney family wider, like Grandma Jules was Julie Andrews and things like that, and Uncle Walt, you know, the little fun things you do to get yourself through a 9-hour shift.
Okay, exactly. Alyssa, what was your nickname then?
So only Fredwin would call me it, and I did not care for it because he meant it in a loving way. I started around the time Frozen came out, and he would say, "Hello, Elsa," because phonetically my name was spelled Elsa with an I in the middle. And as the Frozen phenomenon wore on, my patience for Frozen became less and less, and Elsa was the one singing that song that took 2 years after I left the store to stop hearing in my dreams.
Why don't tell us about when you used to sell the Elsa dresses, because the Elsa dresses were sold out. Now, if you guys, Alyssa and her friend Laura were, obviously we were all cast members, and there was a period in that time when you couldn't buy an Elsa dress, and because we were the flagship store, we were the only ones that would have them. So can you give us a little regaling on how it was to sell those dresses and have all the guests lining up for them?
Well, to begin with, there was a time where even we did not have them. And there was a sort of almost blame game that went around Disney, where people at the park, we wouldn't have them, and we would say the recurring theme would be, we came here and we're going to Disney World and she wants to dress as Elsa to meet Elsa, which makes sense, but we don't have Elsa. And I would say, well, unfortunately we don't have an Elsa dress at the moment, but I'm sure they have it at the park. And they would say, actually, we called ahead and they've been sold out for a month, and they said the flagship would have it. So it would be this fun thing where everybody was trying to be very helpful and magical, but there were just none. And when we did, it was horrible, because you want to be magical, but on the 18th time in a night where you have said the same thing about, and you feel for these people very, very strongly, because they're desperate, and they're going, but you don't understand. She's a 7'8". But maybe if you have a 5'6", maybe if you have a 9'10". And it was like, we don't even have a 3. We have nothing. We are so sorry. We don't have the doll. We don't have an Elsa shirt. We have nothing frozen but one doll of Hans, and nobody wants it because it's Hans. So you would feel very, very bad. And people would get more and more desperate. And then finally you would go, but you're going to Disney World. It's, you know, it's okay that she's not wearing the dress. She's going to meet Elsa. You're going to probably wait 5 hours, but she's going to. And that, you know, when I was 6 years old, I went to Disney World for the first time. And I don't really think I cared what I was wearing. I was meeting Mickey. I was meeting the characters, you know, and I'm like, it's okay if it's not perfect. If she gets upset, she's not going to remember. She's going to remember that she went to Disney World and she had the best time. And they would go, okay, but do you have any in the back that are ripped?
I don't know if it's a fair question, but do you think it's more parents that are wanting this than the, you know, the six-year-old?
I think that it is definitely a status symbol when it becomes such a phenomenon. Because if you're going to Florida and your daughter wears a 7'8", but you're willing to try and squeeze her into a 5, I think it's more a status symbol where I was able to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at you. Your daughter couldn't. And I think that the children do buy into it. But, and I'm sure you both could agree, you don't remember in your happiest moments necessarily what you were wearing or what you were eating. You remember that first time you walked into the park. You know, like Al said on one of his interviews that when he goes with someone for the first time, he looks at them looking at that castle for the first time. And there's nothing like it. You know, and I have been there in weather that's too hot, weather that's too cold, pants that were drenched, you know, in a poncho. The first time I went down, there was a hurricane. But I felt euphoric. It doesn't matter. So I do think that going down, it's like, oh, mommy, you know, I want an Elsa dress. And it's hard to get. And the mother doesn't want to say no. But they're not going to remember so much the dress. They're going to remember, you know, the experience.
I think that is really a great answer.
Yeah.
And I think as parents, we do buy into the trends of the day and then inflict them basically onto our kids. Yeah.
As parents, we just have to let it go sometimes, right? As parents, let it go.
Let it go.
So we can say the same. What are you crying for? You're at Disney World. What are you crying for?
I never had an officially licensed Disney dress until I was an adult, and I got it on a discount.
Yeah, I mean, but I'll tell you, like, I think you had sold a dress one time. You had told me that there was one size, like, I think was it 16 that was the biggest size that it came in? It was either.
Yeah.
And I think we had a 16 dress that you sold, and the lady had a kid maybe 5 years old, but she was going to cut it down. She was like a tailor or something, or she knew somebody. And we like looked at her buying this dress, but it was the only one that we had. And she was like, I'll take it. And I could just imagine what they had to do with this poor dress to get it to fit this little tiny kid.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't work for the company anymore. And I don't think that if this is a secret that isn't supposed to come out, I don't think it's so bad that I would be blacklisted for life. But do you remember, Al, that they had the coronation dresses come in because they were so desperate to have anything frozen and they just didn't have Anna, they didn't have Elsa's original costume, but they had already started the production line on the coronation dresses. So they did it quickly. And everybody was so excited. There was finally going to be New Frozen, the cast was very excited because we could make magic. We could say, well, we have better than the dress every other little girl has. We have the coronation gowns. And Anna's came in and they turned people's skin green.
Yes, I do remember that. That was crazy. Yeah, no, you wouldn't be blacklisted for that because Disney doesn't want to have products like that out there. But I do remember that. Yeah.
We had to destroy them. But at the time, we were just told to say that we were sold out. And someone got hold of something and found out that like 2 dozen of them had been delivered minutes before. I don't know how. Like, they saw the ship, they stole the shipping label. I don't know, from the boxes that were being unpacked. I have no idea. But this man and woman said to me, we know you have them and we want them. And I basically put my job on the line and they said, listen, they're not viable. You can't buy them because they're actually dyeing the children's skin green. So oh, you can't, God. We can't sell them. That your daughter will look like Elphaba. And this woman looks me dead in the eyes and she goes, ma'am, I do not care. She wants the dress. And I was like, I'm going to go talk to my manager. And then I hid in the back for 20 minutes.
Let it blow over.
Yeah, I think a little bit it's about status.
It is. And I'll tell you, that kid would have been green with envy for the other Elsa dress.
Oh.
We would have been, is
this, I would not have had a good day.
No. I mean, you know, she might have looked like Pasquale, you know.
Exactly. I think if I went to Disney World and I turned green, I would remember it as a negative experience.
It really is. But, you know, we're talking about all this, you know, Disney stuff. And working at 7-Eleven was a lot of fun because, you know, like we were going to, you know, a lot of the Disney stores have gone away. And it was, I mean, you could probably speak to this, Alyssa, in that. It was kind of like when people couldn't afford to go to the parks or whatever, the Disney stores were a great segue, and they would hold you off over a winter, right? And we would get many guests in who would speak about that, right?
Exactly. Or you know, we told her that we would take her for Christmas, but we have to delay it until the summer. So we got her a little magic here. And also we were right across from the shows, which I thought was very nice because they would come in, they would buy, say, a Simba doll, and they would take a little girl or a little boy to their first Broadway show.
Exactly. And heaven knows, I remember Disney didn't want any of the Lion King shows to be too empty. So I think each of us probably saw Lion King about 10 times, right?
Well, somebody in charge of the tickets did not like me. So I only got to see it once as a guest with Lore. I never officially was given them. And I was even told that this certain person doesn't want you to go. But Lore is, so I'm giving Lore 2 tickets.
Wow. Well, that was okay. I mean,
you know what? It was really good. I saw it and it was not my favorite show. So I wasn't green with envy like certain Wicked Witches.
Exactly. You weren't green whenever you weren't. Exactly. Well,
I like Aladdin.
Yeah. Aladdin was great. And Mary Poppins, I'd imagine, too, right?
I never saw the Disney on Broadway. I saw was Beauty and the Beast twice, which I think might be the best Broadway show I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of Broadway shows in high school. In college, I was in SUNY Purchase and it was all theater arts and stuff, so I would go to Broadway shows and write reviews. I would buy tickets and go write reviews or try to get in the newspaper writing reviews about Broadway shows. And so I saw probably 20 in college. And Beauty and the Beast was just for pleasure twice, and it was probably the best Broadway show I've ever seen. And then Aladdin was right up there.
It sure was.
I saw The Lion King, but other than that, I never saw Newsies, Little Mermaid, or Tarzan.
Absolutely, and we used to get a lot of the folks would come in, right? I mean, we were open late. Yeah. We were open until 12, 1 o'clock, and, you know, it was store closed at 12 if you remember. We were there till one. And remember the goodnight ceremony?
No, they closed at 1, Al.
Right? A little goodnight ceremony.
It closed at 1 a.m.
It did close at 1 a.m., that's right.
1 a.m. because my train was 45 minutes later, and I would make it at running on the platform sometimes because it was the last train out of the city.
Wow. Yeah. Good times. Yeah. Good times at 777, right? So now that we have you talking about Disney, right? What do you, at Monorail Tales, we love to find out what we call your Disney side. So can you tell us some of your favorite characters, or when you go down to Walt Disney World, where do you like to stay? What do you like to
talk about my Disney side? Well, when they got me hooked young. The first movie I saw was The Little Mermaid. And the first movie I saw in a theater was The Little Mermaid. And I would be a child who would get obsessive about movies. And I guess now I'm an adult who does. But my mother will regale you with the tales of like 5 movies that she would not be able to purchase, like they were out of stock. Like Sleeping Beauty was in the vault, and we would have to go to our local video store and rent a VHS, which if you have younger viewers, they do not know. And every time, like, we would return it on Tuesday, I'd be back there on Wednesday to get it for 5 more days. I was obsessed with Disney movies. And then I would, when I saw The Little Mermaid, every day my dad had to come home from work and call me Ariel, and he was King Triton, and like there was just no dinner until we played Little Mermaid. And there was not a lot of second lead females, so my poor mother would be stuck as like Ursula or Mrs. Potts when I got older. But yeah, first movie in the theater, Little Mermaid. Would buy or rent Sleeping Beauty constantly. And then when I was 5, they started telling me I would get to go to Disney World. And a few months after I turned 6, that was my first trip, and that was it.
Well, you've gone, if I remember correctly, you've gone almost every year of your life, right? I mean, with the health situation, you missed a couple, but that wasn't your fault, but you've pretty much gone almost every single year, correct?
In my adulthood, it has been at least every winter once. And when I worked at the store, it was every winter, and then Laura and I would go every Halloween and Food and Wine time. And one year, I went in June because I was having a bad day and said, well, I got an email about really cheap flights on JetBlue. Let's play a game, because Orlando's never on it. We're going to work. I'm going to pretend, and I'm going to pick a random week in June in like 3 weeks, because it was the end of May. And I'm going to put in some dates just to see if we, how much would a 5-day apart flight on to MCO? And it ended up being like, I don't know, $30 and one way. And then I said, okay, went to work, worked 9 hours, joked about how cheap it was. If anybody was planning on going, try to go JetBlue, what have you. So then a troublemaker we worked with said to me, you know what? It's not going to happen, but take the fantasy a little bit more. Tomorrow, when you get up, make a phone call and just for argument's sake, see what the cash rate would be for whatever hotels. Have some more fun. Ha ha. Well, 12 hours after that conversation, I was on the phone with my mother asking if my parents would mind babysitting the dog. And then 3 weeks later, we went to Disney World. So I'm obsessed. And the funny joke about the Return to Disney World commercials is we did not get to do everything on our last trip, as you never do, even when you've gone 1,000 times. I wanted to go to the Yeti, and we didn't make it, the Mission Everest. And Laura said to me, calm down. We come every year and the Yeti's not going somewhere. And then we were, and then the pandemic was announced officially in New York 3 weeks later. And I haven't been back.
Yeah, and the last time you went, we actually met you in Disney Springs, and you actually took me to the bake shop, which was the, you know, where they serve all the gluten free things, and we had dinner in the Mexican restaurant. I remember.
The things I long for aren't even the rides. Some days I miss some of the restaurants.
Yes, well,
I'll be like, I really, what do you want for dinner? I really could go for some Skipper's Cantina, but I'm not getting that.
Yes, you know what, Alyssa? I'm the same way. I can do without the rides. I have more fun doing other things at Disney. I would like to ask you, which one is your favorite park that you like to spend time at?
I'm the worst at favorite ride, favorite park. It's tough because I can give you my least favorite park, and it is no disrespect. Epcot is my least favorite.
Okay.
But it's not that it's bad. It's that it's sometimes the hardest thing, this hardest elements, because it's, like I said, we often go in January. And there's that lake in the middle of Epcot where it crosses between Future World and the World Pavilion.
Right.
And sometimes those nights when you wanted to see the illuminations, the wind would pick up against that water. And even in Florida in January, it can be like 40 degrees. And it would just be cold and you would be wet and you would be walking around. And a lot of stuff was closed. There wasn't a lot. When the first time I went, a lot of the parks hadn't been as developed as they are now. But I think Magic's got to be my favorite just because, you know, it's the first, and it's the first I ever went to. And it's got the castle.
Right. I mean, well, the argument that you bring up for that is very plausible, because many guests feel the same way, because typically they start out in Magic Kingdom. And one of the criticisms of Epcot throughout the years has been, and again, you guys know I'm a big Figment fan, is there's not enough characters in Epcot. And, you know, people, guests go to Magic Kingdom, kids go, guests go, and then you have like an overload of all the characters in the square and all that. And then you go to Epcot and you don't really have that same thing. So I think a lot of guests feel the same way that you do.
And it's also where they are, because they do have them. Now, if you want to meet with a character time, you know Woody and Buzz are going to be at X or Y time in Magic Kingdom next to the, I can walk you through the Magic Kingdom like a map. Next to the bathroom under what used to be Splash Mountain.
Yes.
That's where they have like Woody and Jesse, maybe Buzz. Sometimes if you know they're going to be there in, say, an hour and a half, you can go and try and get on rides that are right there. Whereas in Epcot, they're in the World Pavilion. So in France, if you really want to meet Beast, he's going to be out in an hour. Well, it's not enough time to go all the way to Norway and ride Frozen, but there's really only a restaurant and a pastry shop.
I think you're totally right about that. Well, we're going to circle back.
There are some trips I go to Epcot maybe six times, and there are some times I would like to not go at all. It's just my mood and what if they're having a festival, because Figment's there, and I love Figment. He's my favorite.
Me too. We share the same. Well, here's a question. Mm-hmm. When you go to Magic Kingdom, this is always the age-old guest question, right? You're walking up Main Street. Do you venture left? See, some people go around the clock, you know, like a clock. So if you were going down Main Street, do you typically go to Adventureland first, or do you go to Tomorrowland first, go to your right? How do you go around Magic Kingdom?
That's why New Disney, the Disney that I still love it, and it's still completely magical, but The Disney World I long for is the Disney World that no longer exists. There was a show in Hollywood Studios at one point where they said it was a tribute to the Hollywood that never really was, but always will be. Basically, as an adult, I am now, I am young, but I have injuries. So sometimes I feel like a grandmother. When I walk into Disney World and when I walk into the Magic Kingdom now, the first place I usually go is to the left, because that's where I have to go get my disability access. I don't think it's called that anymore. For the DAS pass. I can't stand on my knee in place because I have a severely torn meniscus. So I get that. And then if I want a coffee, then I zigzag over to Starbucks. So it kind of, and of course, fast passes. There were, the last time I went, there were the fast passes that you would book beforehand rather than you would get day of. So if I had a fast pass for Space Mountain, I would go towards Tomorrowland. I would go towards Frontierland if the fast pass was for Thunder or Splash Mountain. But if it were my preference, it would probably be straight ahead, right in front of the castle, and take a picture.
Cool.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah, I haven't heard anybody. I mean, it's, to me, that's something. You're the first person I've ever spoke to who actually went right to the castle first. I'm sure, because some people do it right on Main Street, but. That's interesting, because I guess, you know, when a lot of guests go, they're in that panic mode of where they're going to go and what they're going to do. But that's an interesting Disney side. It goes, I think it circles back to how much you love going as a kid, and how, you know, your identification with the princesses and Ariel. And I think that's amazing.
I can tell you the first place first way we ever turned in Disney World when I was six on my first ever trip.
Really? Where?
We went to Frontierland.
Wow.
Because we went towards Frontierland because we wandered that way. And we rode, my first ride was Splash Mountain. And then we did Peter Pan on the way back. And then that night, we saw Spectrum Magic for the first time.
Incredible. And
we saw it in, I assume at some point we went to Tomorrowland, but I think it might have even been a different day. We saw all of that side.
And that's what makes Disney so incredible. It's these tangible memories that we just carry throughout our lives, and just kind of, they unfold and we deepen them. But you always remember all those amazing things. I mean, and you know, speaking about memories and how things work in Disney, I want to talk about your book. You're a published author.
Yes.
And I can't wait. Your book is called The Shop Girl's Tale. And you've actually based a lot of those characters off people who worked in the Disney store on 777. But can you enlighten us on The Shop Girl's Tale and tell us a little bit about the genesis of that idea and how you thought about writing a novel like that?
I have a writing degree. And the monotony of not working I can't think of what we were supposed to call it as the register, box office. So from working the box office or the cash was, I'm not good at on the floor. I've since been diagnosed with anxiety, and the just being on the floor with the people and the music and the lights was overstimulating me. And I basically would write story. I would write fan fiction a little bit. Like I would write little like X-Men stories some days, but by the third year, I started writing this little original story, and it wasn't meant to actually be anything. It was just like creating a character who wrote, who like worked in Megastore in Times Square, and the first line was, or is, there's something very soothing about folding a t-shirt. And it is huge because it subconsciously I was telling myself, like, you have to busy your hands because you keep picking your nails and you keep, you know, ripping your skin. And then it was fun. It was this silly little story that I was going to write where it was based on an imaginary character who wasn't me, who isn't me, who has similarities to me, but not really. And James McAvoy had just gotten a divorce. So the actor who came in, she meets an actor and he came in, and I was like, if he came in to shop here, I wouldn't have the courage to hit on him. But what if, like, James McAvoy went into his shop and met this regular girl who works in a megastore and found her interesting? And that's kind of the joke that spiraled into the book. And then I needed material, so I combined certain people we worked with lovingly, and added some other people I had experienced in my life, you know, into these characters. And the greatest compliment I can give Al is he's not in it. Yeah. And then, so it's based on actors that I liked and people that I knew, and anyone who was going to have adventures was going to have to go to Disney World. So my main character, Erica, goes to Disney World twice in the book, and I don't think it takes place over an entire year, because you could not say Disney store legally. You can't make the character work at the Disney store, because then people would want it to be everything that happens in it, all of the mishaps would have to be factually accurate and possibly reflect poorly on the company if they were, but of course they're not, they're all fiction. But the character goes to Disney World and she walks around downtown Springs and has a conversation, has like a hilarious, nonsensical conversation with her boyfriend that actually is based pretty verbatim on Laura and I walking around downtown Springs. But Lore is not my partner. She's just my best friend and my sister. But we've had this nonsensical conversation that we were dead cold sober having, and I thought, that sounds like two drunk people and they're on a date in downtown Springs, so wouldn't it be funny if they had this ridiculous conversation?
Well, I think it's wonderful, and you know, just the fact of now everybody wants to write the all-American novel. I mean, you know, what's the famous song from the famous line from the song, real estate novelist and probably will be for life? How many people, everybody wants to write that all-American novel, and you've done it. And not only did you do it, doing it, completing it is a miracle in and of itself, but to get published is the holy grail. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, if someone's out there wants to write a book, a novel, can you tell us a little bit about, first off, what constitutes a novel? I mean, I know there's things called a novella, but how many words is it actually a novel if someone was out there decided to write?
My writing advice would be write your story. Don't worry about how long it is versus pages or words. Mine is a long-ish novel. Novels, I believe, start at something like 280 pages. Mine's 380. My English teacher from high school would be so mad. I don't remember. There's a difference. It has something to do with the length. I think it has to be under 200 words is a novella. And then it becomes a novel over 200 or pages. Sorry. Short story is like under 50. And then novella, I believe, is under 200 pages. And then over that would be novel. I guess epic would be 500. I'm not really sure. It's just it's big. That's all. It's just bigger.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, So now you've written this book and it's amazing. I'm sure people have, you know, proofed it and stuff. How do you go out and actually get published? What it, what, it, What do you have to do to get published? I can only imagine the competition of, because it's expensive to print a book. I mean, let's face it, with all the prices going up, how do you shop that book? How do you get someone even to read it?
Well, there are a lot of ways to get published. There's a lot of rejection, but there are a lot of different routes to go about. And now it's easy enough that you can self-publish on your own with Kindle Unlimited or Amazon or whatever, where you just have an ebook and you pay all the different fees. And what I did was, it was an independent publishing house, but there's all where I sent this unsolicited novel, which I had self-edited and then had Lore read over as well, self-edited, and it's not formatted, but you know, if it has for the most part grammar and punctuation and things like that. And I sent it to a friend of mine, had published a book with this boutique house in Canada. And because I did not think, I have horrible self-esteem, and I did it to shut Laura up when she said, if you don't send it to publishers, I will. And it says, not going to get published, but I'll send it to this woman who I knew, publisher. Okay, so I send it, and it was accepted. And what they do is, you give them money, you give them a fee. All different boutique and independent publishers would have different fees. And it was supposed to be two rounds of editing, formatting, the ISBN number was included, the cover art. And for me, it was a little over $3,000, which is very pricey. But I didn't have to seek out all the different elements of it. If you have a book agent, or I think it would probably have to be a book agent or some sort of representative where you pay them, they will then be able to send it to HarperCollins, Penguin, the bigger houses that actually... So I don't have somebody who works for me. Basically, it would be the equivalent of an actor calling up, say, Touchstone. I don't think they exist, but, you know, Touchstone Studios, and saying, hey, I would like to have scripts. They don't usually do it.
Right. That's a good analogy, because Touchstone is actually owned by Disney. So I like how you put that in there, keep it on the Disney beam.
I know it used to be. Good. I wasn't sure.
Incredible. See, Sheila, she's really on the beam. She's not like us off the beam.
But the benefit of that is you don't pay the publishers. You don't pay a big house, and they will get you promotion, and they will, you know, they book your promotion. They send out copies for reviews. They get ads on Amazon, and that's all included in a contract. But your book has to be phenomenal. I mean, it's, and you have to have already paid an agent. So I could pay an agent, you know, $500, and they send this book out to, and then I'm sure there's a submission fee to the actual publishers, but I'm not sure because I never tried it. And then you just lose that money if they're rejected, which you would assume a lot are. But so I sent it to one person. I maybe should have sent it to more. And I got, we would like to publish it. I thought I had hit the lottery, and this was my moment to become the next, like, Danielle Steele or James Patterson, and I was going to be in the money for the rest of my life, you know. So I accept the terms. And that was my journey. But they do still reject, because for a time after that, I did work for the company in editing, and I do know that they did reject a lot of other things, but maybe 50% versus 99%, which would be at, you know,
right,
Random House.
Well, your book, let me tell you, I read the book a couple times, and I really so enjoy the book. Where can someone pick up this book? Can you tell us, if someone's out there listening? Because let me tell you, folks, it's a great book. It's very entertaining. Well, this is a fabulous writer. Where would someone go and purchase this?
I don't think necessarily it's not for me. People tell me it's a really good book and it's a great story and it could even make a wonderful film or TV series. And as I said, I have very low self-esteem, Sheila, so I don't believe this to be true. But everybody, friends of anybody who's ever done it, 5-star review, 4-star reviews, and that it would be wonderful. So that is kind of the frustrating part of going this route because I have absolutely no backing in getting it around. So it's all like self-pushing and thing. But so thank you for asking, Al. It is Amazon and it's in the digital and paperback format. And then it's on barnesandnoble.com I believe Kobo is the e-reader of Canada. There's iBooks and Google Books for the digital version as well. And then you can get it online in paperback for sure at Amazon and barnesandnoble.com. That's and then, great. I mean, I have them in person, but, and then it's going to be, it is in the process now. It has just started to be recorded to be an audiobook, and that will be on Audible.
That's fabulous. I mean, and you yourself, I mean, it must have been so exciting because you do this from time to time. You actually have gone to Barnes & Noble and done sessions where you're selling the book, but you're having you speaking. And tell us a little bit how exciting that must be just to go into like a local Barnes & Noble. You're like the local author. And you're having can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I've done probably 3 events at libraries and Barnes & Noble where you go in and people ideally will ask questions. And you talk a little bit about the book and you could explain the journey of what's behind the book or you could just talk about the novel itself. And then they ask questions and you sign. And, you know, it is nerve inducing, but it's a rush to see your book on a poster. Even if 3 people show up, it's nice to see, it in the window.
I'm telling you, I can only imagine because you think of all those folks who've written these things and the rejections that come out there, and just it's a tremendous accomplishment. And you know, back in the day, it was never easy to get published, but now it's with the fees and all the things going on, it's so competitive. It's probably worse than almost, and few things are probably worse than getting a recording contract. But it's one of the things that's very, very difficult. I mean, do you think it's a little bit easier living like in a? I mean, obviously, you live in a major city. You live in Yonkers, and you're right near New York City. Do you think in these days it's a little easier if you live like, can you actually walk the book over maybe? Or is it easier being in a bigger city? Helpful? Or what do you think?
What, to get it published or to get it in stores and libraries, etc.?
Right. I mean, certainly like in a bigger city, you have the ability to go to different places and we don't have too much snow, but do you think it's a little easier if someone lives in New York City, which used to be the center of publishing? Like, where are most of the publishing houses? Are they still in New York City?
Everybody submits online now. So I really don't, everything is, we don't accept hard copy. Because I have been attempting to write a follow-up. It's slow, but it's a slow process. I was not displeased with where I published my book, but I would say that it was a learning experience. And even though I still think that anything I write will probably be rejected, I might look into the ways of submitting it to bigger houses or, what an agent fee would be or just a lot of different independent places, because it is not a bad experience, but it is not one I would guarantee wanting to do again with this particular place. And everything I have seen has been all submissions are digital format. And then some will say you need an agent. Some will say we don't accept at this time. But nothing takes paper anymore, so I don't know. But I will say that it's more likely to probably have a local bookstore in a smaller community.
I have a couple of questions for you. The first one is, I mean, I think I heard you just say you're trying to start your second one or starting your second one. How long did it take you to write your first book?
Well, it was dribs and drabs on 15-minute breaks at first with work. And then, but then after that, I would say it was, not counting those little ideas that I would just jot down, it was probably a year to write and a year to self-edit.
Okay. And your front cover for the book, so for any of our would-be Disney authors out there, did you do the drawing yourself on the book, or where do you go for that?
It is not actually, I know a lot of them are very like animated looking now. Mine is actually a picture of a woman, like a model running, which is not model shape, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Running down a beach. So it's a photograph. It looks more like a photograph. That is actually one of the frustrations that I did have with this publishing, because the cover art was included, which sounded great because I had this great image in my head of exactly what I wanted it to look like. There was one artist, and I would have to explain it in detail and say, I have this image. It's the back of a woman. She's in a dress. It's flowy. Her hair is wild, and she is running across the beach. And it could be drawn if it's drawn well, but it just has to look like that. And this artist did not agree with my idea, which can happen sometimes, but I sort of feel like if it is my book, it should not be a collaboration. It should be my idea. It shouldn't be sunglasses. It shouldn't be a pool. There's not a pool in the entire book, but there's a woman who has a little bit of a time. She hits a situation where she gets overwhelmed and she goes running across the beach, and the waves are soothing to her. The waves have always been soothing to me. It was important that this was there. And then finally, she drew what I would say was a mermaid standing straight up, like there was no separation of the legs, that looked like it was done by maybe an 8-year-old with very small like waves drawn, like when you're little and you draw the birds like an M in the sky. And she said, are you happy now? And I said, well, I kind of would like a photograph more than a drawing now, because I see that you have limited skills on this particular image. And then she just went, yeah, here, fine. So sometimes you can, I guess, if you have artistic skills, draw it yourself. I don't. I've had a chance at being good at drawing when I was very little, but then I had an injury to my dominant hand. So that sort of, I don't know that I ever would have been confident drawing my own cover, but I suppose you could, but in my case, you just would be the short of that answer.
And I find that really interesting that you don't have 100% sort of say on what your front of your book should look like. The other question I had for you, go back to your very first book that was sold. And I'm not talking about, you know, your best friend buying that book. I'm talking about a complete stranger buying that book. What's that feeling like to an author?
Well, it came after talk about it. I suppose, because online sales, I don't really know who it was, but in person, that it's exhilarating to see, you know, I can check my Amazon paperback sales. I can't see the digital ones, but weekly there's a report. And the first time it said 3, I thought, well, it's probably family members. But when it was 20 in 6 weeks, that or 6 months, that was pretty fun. But the first time in person, I was like, yeah. And she bought more than one.
Wow. Nice. Did you sign them? Did you sign them? Or did she just buy the books?
I signed them. Yeah.
I can only imagine how you signed. It was your hand was probably shaking, right? When she was signing. Well, Sheila, I don't know if you know this, Sheila, but Alyssa has the most wonderful dog. His name is David Graham. Graham David. Why am I reversed it? His name is Graham David. He's the cutest dog, and they take him for a nice long walk at night. And he's actually like he's like Alyssa's child. He's such a wonderful dog.
He's on the back of the book. He's in the author picture.
So tell us about the sequel. You talked about writing a sequel. Now, we don't want to give any of the story away, but you're not currently a cast member. So where might you get some inspiration for the next, for Erica, for the next book?
You know, that actually is probably why it's taking me so long, because halfway through, spoiler, if people buy the book or if you read it, Sheila, halfway through, Erica ceases to be a cast member, but she still goes to Disney World and think, and her life continues to evolve. Well, Erica is not a cast member. She works at a different unnamed store, but, you know, so it's, that might be what's going on with why it's taking so long to write a sequel, because I lack inspiration between not working with all of these fun people and these ridiculous guests, and of course the pandemic, where everybody in my daily life that would have inspired it was just my family and things like that. But it's inching along. It's sort of not having a flow to it, if that makes sense. Like I wrote this one idea, and then I had this other idea, but it doesn't connect. It's all the same characters, but they're different scenarios. So the first one goes from like working in the store, and then they go on a holiday, but it makes sense, and it's just lacking that connectivity. It's more like little episodes that have yet to web together.
Yeah. Now, would going to Disney inspire you? Does this mean more Disney trips for you?
You know, no, I want to, but I have this extreme fear of two things. One is getting sick, because we hit on earlier about that I have issues that need to be acknowledged as I got older in Disney World. But also, I have a lowered immunity because of this, but I also, it's not just the fear of getting the coronavirus. It's not just the fear that I'm going to go on an airplane and someone will cough on me and I will be scared for a week. I have my vaccine. I will wear a mask. It's also, Disney means so much to me that after so long, the lack of magic. I want to make sure if I go to Disney World, it's Disney World. I don't want to meet a character necessarily, but I want to be able to see other people enjoying that meet and greet. I want to be able to be thirsty and drink a water walking down the street without fear. I want the parades. I want the shows. I'm a snob. I don't want to be in a huge crowd watching fireworks right now, but I'm going to be damned if my day ends at the Magic Kingdom and I'm not watching Happily Ever After or whatever the new one is.
Well, I think in speaking about what you were saying, I think maybe, I mean, I know you haven't been here and I haven't been here either, but if you ever went, have you ever heard of Disney's Vero Beach Resort?
No.
Which is, it's kind of like Aulani, but Aulani is in Hawaii. So it's this resort in Florida. It's actually, it's an island grown terrace in Vero Beach. And it's actually a hotel that's owned by Disney. And you go there and they do character breakfast. Mickey is there. And I think that might be a nice, and it's what they used to do, and they probably still do it, is you spend 3 days there and you spend like 4 days, kind of like a surf and turf type of thing, because you said you love waves and water, and that's the cover of The Shop Girl's Tale. I think you would probably really enjoy a relaxing time at the Vero Beach Resort.
Yeah.
And then go to Disney or vice versa. I think that might be a good inspiration for you. What do you think?
I think it would be nice if I was a bestseller and I all of a sudden had an influx of money and I could just take a very long vacation that went to the beach and then went to Disney World. And I was able to bring Graham because now he and I haven't been apart at all since basically for more than a few hours since 2 years ago.
There's a lot of hotels now with Disney who they're actually welcoming the animals, and there's quite a few. So I don't think that'll be an issue. Would Graham be okay with going on the airplane?
I don't know. I think so, because he can sit in my lap. He's very small. But I will get there. We'll get there when I'm ready to get on an airplane.
You will definitely get there. I mean, the love of Disney is going to overpower any kind of Disney magic. I mean, I was mentioning this to Sheila on one of my shows, was that the things that I saw on Disney, how many people came in with double knee replacements and quadruple bypasses, and that was their inspiration to walk up Main Street again. And I think, you know, you're going to be the same. You're just going to get up one day and say, I really want to go. And you're definitely going to go because you love it so much. You're a part of the magic so much. And I could tell you from working with Alyssa and her sister, Laura, they were when I would come out and I would look at the sheet as to who was working that night, it was such a relief to me to know that these two ladies were going to be on the floor. Because, you know, if you've never been to the Times Square store in Times Square, and it's the flagship store, it's a very strong equivalent to the Emporium. Lots of cast members, lots of activity, open late, high volume sales. And Alyssa and Laura were the rocks at the at that store for me. I would just be so happy to see their names on the roster. And it was just so lovely to have them to be there. And they were so nice with the guests. I mean, Alyssa, she's not going to tell you. She's, you know, because she's humble. But she's not going to tell you how much of a great job that she did ringing up sales. I mean, we used to have guests from overseas who would come in. And they would have, when I say $5,000 or $10,000 sales, there were times that Alyssa and Laura were at the POS, at the box office, as we called it, for long periods of time. I think ringing for over an hour. Am I right about that?
They would call in back baggers to back me because they had so long, and they'd have to have somebody. Because that store, I mean, that was a big deal. Like, it was the center of everywhere. All of the tourists would come in. We were open super late. So it would always be fun when we were kind of in the dead time where everybody had kind of gone home after the Broadway shows, but we were still open till one in case anybody would come in. And then somebody would come in and have a huge purchase because the entire store came alive. We all could do something. they were the exact opposite of the person who came in at 12:59 and asked a question. Yeah, it was a big deal store. And Al, the day Al left, I actually had to be put on my dinner break early because I cried so hard until that moment, I didn't realize how much I needed to know that Al might be at work sometimes.
Oh, that is so sweet.
So sweet. They're lovely.
Learned half of my Disney knowledge just standing next to Al on a floor talking when we probably shouldn't have been.
I can believe that. Honestly, I can believe that. I do have to ask this.
Oh, can I add something really quick?
Sure.
About Al said about the inspiration to walk again and things to go to Disney World. I always half-heartedly made a joke. Like, if I ever found out I had this horrible disease and I had a good chance that, you know, God forbid I was diagnosed with cancer or something, and it was like bad odds, the first thing I would do before I did anything else was make sure to go to Disney World, because no matter how many times I go, I would want to go one more time before I died. So I have never, thank God, had a diagnosis like that. I'm terrified of going under anesthesia. And when I got a diagnosis for my torn meniscus, they said it probably wouldn't be able to be rehabbed to a place where I could walk again. And before I had my follow-up with a specialist, I said to Lore, I want to go to Disney World because God forbid I die under anesthesia. I have to go to Disney World. And we went to Disney World for her birthday. And I was fine. I didn't have to have surgery. And I rehabbed it so much listening to my Disney music in my earphones because I was determined that if physical therapy could get me to 85% and the surgery could get me to 95%, I would be fine at 85%. And I did. And the surgeon was kind of like, the surgeon was kind of in awe. It sort of came out like, I gave you the summer to get adjusted to the idea that it wasn't going to work, and it actually did. And I was like, that's Disney World. It's the magic of Disney World.
There that, you go.
It's that magical pixie dust. All those celebrations and things, you know, that you always took part in, and the magic of Disney comes through again.
And then because of that, I got to see Wishes when they canceled it. I got to see Wishes every night for a week. And see? It was like the last week of it.
When you worked at Disney, you used to get paid, what, every 2 weeks?
Oh, I thought you were asking the fee. I was like, I don't know.
No.
Every week.
So you got paid every week. Give us an idea how much of that money, how much of your salary went back into Disney because you were buying products from the store.
When I first started, everything that I saw was cute. I had to have. I was buying everything under the stuff. I started at holiday. So I started in October, but they already put out all the Christmas stuff. So I wanted the snow globes and the pajamas and five. I had all the ornaments, but lucky for me, I'm also very thrifty. So even though I wanted all the ornaments, I tried to whittle it down to ones that I thought were really, really nice. So I got one for me. I don't remember what it was. I think it might be the glass slipper. And I bought one for my mother. And then I bought her all shirts because I didn't buy for me too much. I bought as gifts so I could enjoy looking at them. But then I got better at buying products because I also came to realize the ones that would probably end up not selling and I would be able to get on clearance. But then a lot of the money probably went back into going to Disney World. Because I got what I thought was going to be a holiday job to Disney World or to the Disney store in hopes that maybe I would get a discount on the January trip before they decided not to keep me. Because every other store, holiday jobs are just a seasonal thing. But they ended up keeping a significant amount of people because they are Times Square and there's a big turnaround. We worked with a lot of actors, so they would ideally get roles and no longer be able to work there. So they probably kept about 10% of 50 people versus nobody getting kept at the one in my local mall when I was little because they were just there for holiday influx. So I didn't think I was actually going to stay for very long. So I was going to buy all that product for 25% off that first year, and then they kept me. Once I was there for more than a year, and they gave us, what they might not have anymore, a magical pass that you could go into that park by, the cast member can go into the park any day of the year, and they don't pay entry fee to any of the parks except on Christmas Day. So wow. I decided to use that, not realizing that 90% of my paycheck probably went into the discounted hotel, but I'm now going twice in a year and it's discounted. So why not go to Coronado instead of the All-Star and the food and the airplane? And well, it was nice that people gave me, you know, my parents are very generous. They would give Laura and I, oh, you know, here's $100, buy yourself a nice dinner. Well, now I have to buy you a $50 shirt because you were so generous to give us something to go. So I want to bring you a souvenir. So, you know.
And so on and so on.
sort of that thing where it's like the money goes in and the money goes out.
Yeah. The reason why I'm asking, I used to work, I was a manager at Books A Million for a while. And I think, you know, I didn't see much of my paycheck. It all went into books and stuff. So,
Of course, because you reason having extra because you're getting it maybe on a discount.
Yeah, and especially if they have Disney books and Disney stuff, for sure. The other question, if I was to say to you in all your time working for Disney, now push Al to one side. He cannot be part of the answer. What was your best memory at working in that store?
My whole life has been tied to working for Disney and the fact that I actually had my senior college internship with Radio Disney, the now defunct Radio Disney in Manhattan. And that was also a summer of very fun memories. But my favorite memory at the Disney store, Times Square. Ooh, I have to think of something nice because so many good and bad things happened that, you know, some of the bad ones are the ones that stand out before the good. But
oh, we can talk bad if you want.
we could talk about the, I don't know if this is, we could talk about the one that we texted each other. No, I guess we shouldn't talk about that one. About the certain person you originally said didn't like you when we found out that person wasn't in their job anymore.
Oh, no, that's just wicked. But, well, one of my happiest memories was I was having a very hard day. I'd never worked retail before, and this was a 9-hour job. It was supposed to be part-time, but part-time in Times Square is basically a full-time job anywhere else. You're working 4 days a week for 9 hours with a lunch break. That's a long time. And I had heard Let It Go many times that week, and I looked at the screen, and they had, for December, they had started playing Wishes, the holiday Wishes from the parks, and they would live stream it on the TV in the theater. And I looked at it and I got to watch Wishes in the store at work. And I just thought, well, this is why I'm going to do this. And then all the kids sitting there smiling like they'd not, you know, like they were actually at the show. And that was a really nice moment. And I made some really great friends. But some of the things that aren't necessarily the greatest things to happen in the store were some of the fun ones, like someone stole Elsa's castle. Someone went in the front and it was displayed because we were the only ones. It was a Disney store exclusive and we were the only ones who had it. And there was this beautiful castle and it cost probably $200 at least. And because they were so proud, it was right at the door and it walked out. someone shoplifted the castle. There was two security guards. There were two security guards every night during holiday on each side of the door, but they were just like, I don't know. They were able to do it. And then the next day they moved, obviously, the castle displays further back in the store. So it wasn't so quick. And the poor security guard who had been on the door the next night was given a shift at the door with the big castle, with the big Frozen display, but the castle wasn't there. And he was not aware of that. And where it had been was empty. And he said, I think it happened again. Is this an every night occurrence? And, you know, it's the silly things like that. It's people that always stand out to me. Like when I said I interned with Radio Disney, I would get to be in the back of the concerts for Radio Disney. And while I wasn't a huge, you know, that was a little younger than me, the Radio Disney set, I was 21 and they were sort of bubblegum pop. It wasn't, you know, my favorite concert. I wouldn't pay to do it. It was a lot of fun. We went to Six Flags for a concert with the Jonas Brothers. And it was the summer they were becoming big. And so I have a picture with the Jonas Brothers and so many people since they hit it big the next November. So many people since have gone, oh my God, you met the Jonas Brothers. What are they like? And I'm like, I just remember them as young guys. As Nick Jonas was 15 years old. He was this dorky little 15-year-old who was getting yelled at by his mom for eating too much macaroni and cheese.
I love it.
And I mean, I wish I knew what he was going to look like when he grew up. You know, I would have been like, when you're legal, remember this. We could be friends. I could be famous. You could be in a TV adaptation of my book. You know.
I was remember the Radio Disney jingle. Radio Disney, we're all ears.
We're all ears, yeah. But as they say in Les Mis, these are dreams that cannot be.
That's great. I mean, good memories. It's that's what Disney is. It's all good, fun memories. And even the ones that weren't so good are kind of good in some crazy way because you remember them. And that store show had a million stories, I'll tell you that. I do have to say, though, that the security that Lisa was talking about, we didn't have at that point Disney security. So if anyone's out there thinking what happened with Disney security, it was actually private security we brought in. And that was always the thing. They were always talking about doing actual Disney security. That had a lot of great ideas about that, but it never really happened. I think it happened a few years after we let gone, but it wasn't as successful as what they had hoped it would be. But yeah, that was some incident of that actually walking out. Elsa's Castle.
I'll tell you, when Disney started closing all the Disney stores, I think that was one of the biggest mistakes they ever made, to be honest. I know I could go, you know, 30 minutes from my house and I'd have that little bit of Disney magic. I don't get that now.
Me too.
Yeah, it was the same thing.
We had one in our mall. It was a big deal when we got it. I was probably 10 and my cousin, who's a few months younger than me, had one at her mall. And so it was a very big deal when we got, I was probably 8. But they had it first. And we got a Disney store and it was all very exciting. And this mall in the cart, 5 minutes away. So I wanted to work there, but they closed it for renovations and they never reopened. And I wished so hard they would put one there because, I mean, could you imagine getting in the car, driving to work for a 5 minute commute? Coming home 5 minutes, I would commute down there on two trains. It probably took an hour and we would finish at 1 o'clock in the morning. I always wanted the closing shift because I'm not a morning person. And we would leave at 1:30, take a 1:40 or 5 or 1:50 train, and then I would come home and walk the dog. Like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, but those shifts were, I agree. I'm the same as Lister. I'm really not a morning person, so I always did the closing shifts or what we call the swing shift. And she's right. It was, I remember, but you know what's funny about those train rides, if you remember, was that you'd see, you know, New York City is its own little beast or animal, right? You'd always see people from Broadway shows with their instruments, with their cellos and their violins from, you know, because each of the Broadway shows has an orchestra, and you see anything and everything on the subways. At night, it was, you know, to think you're on a, because your first thought is, hey, I'm on an empty subway car, whatever, by myself. It's the reverse. It is full to capacity. The restaurants are open and things are going on. This guy's panhandling for money and then there's other people there in suits. It's just a whole tapestry of different characters. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it got to a point where, like, closing, I couldn't do the subway because it was dangerous. It would have gotten off in a next to a cemetery, and I would have had to walk a significant amount. So I would walk from Times Square all the way to Grand Central, often run, and take the last Metro North out because that would come a couple of blocks from my house. And I every night. Wind, snow, rain, it didn't matter. Every time I had to close, I did it. And I still preferred that over having an opening shift because I would be doing it all in reverse around the same time if I opened.
the people that you had come shopping in the evening, how different were they than the people that would have been there, you know, let's say in the daytime? Did you have still lots of kids coming in at 11 o'clock at night?
Well, my typical shift, because they almost always gave me 9 hours, which I guess was a compliment at competency. I never had the 4 or 5 hour shifts. I would go in at, but I would start at 4. I would have a dinner, ideally somewhere around 9. Sometimes it was 10. And then I would close at 1. And the children would come in at all different times, but the children who would come in at 4 were very different than the children who would come in around midnight.
Okay.
they were fun. For lack of a better term, I guess the ones who would come in early were bratty. They were, I want this, and I want, like, they were more snobbish, sort of, whereas when they would come in later, they would always be more fun, because they would have most likely just seen a Broadway show, or they were here on their first trip to New York, or, you know, they were visiting their aunt who lived in Manhattan. So they were just really excited to be there, and they would want to see the magic mirror, and they would ask you if Mickey was there, and they would, and you would have to say, you know, oh, he's on a cheesecake break. Oh. Well, I don't know if you had to, because we didn't have characters, but, and they would talk to you about who your favorite character was, and, oh, I don't know who Figment is. They tended to be more fun. Whereas the earlier kids would come, and it would be, I want this shirt. Where is, you know, they were bratty. Sometimes they were nice. Sometimes they were all very nice. But, you know, you tended to get when it was late, they were little kids on an experience. So it was, you were kind of more their vacation than just mommy and daddy went shopping with me.
That makes sense, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, and often foreign countries, they were fun, because they would have little accents, and I would try and figure out, like, oh, are you from Germany? Are you from? Yeah. And I would say, how do you say whatever Disney thing in your language? And they, you know, that was fun to interact with. Whereas the daytime, it was more like working in a store.
Oh. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this store, am I correct, is still open?
Yes, it is.
It's very different. A lot of the people we worked with are not there, but I believe it is.
Yeah, it's one okay. of the only, there's only about 3 or 4 real Disney stores left. I mean, it's basically, that's the only free, that's the flagship one, but I believe they're counting the World of Disney as a store now, WOD in Florida. And the airport store in Orlando, and the rest, there's a bunch of outlet stores. So out of approximately 400 or 500, they're down to technically 25, but 22 of those stores or so are pretty much their former outlet stores. So they're not really neighborhood stores. I mean, and that's what you were saying before, Sheila, how much you missed the store. I mean, another big factor of these stores was they would always hire kids, people with special needs. And there was a big tie to the community. They would also work with the local schools. So unfortunately, a lot of that's been lost. And I hope Disney, because they can make a decision tomorrow to reopen some stores. I really hope that they go and they do that. So, they're missing, right, Alyssa? They're missing that tie to the community that way.
I mean, like I had said earlier, like, Disney's Disney. I don't want discount Disney. But the magic is what makes Disney different.
Yeah.
The Disney difference to me is the magic. Like, I was there for the 25th anniversary. I was there for the 45th anniversary. And if I go for, I really want to go for the 50th anniversary, but I want it to be the year of a million dreams. I want it to be, Al was the one who informed me, people did not like it when they made the castle look like a birthday cake for the 25th anniversary. I thought that was the best thing ever.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. I think you're the first one I've heard say that.
He said that too.
Wow.
We were talking one day, and he said about, we'll all get down there on the 5th. I was having a bad day, and he said, think of it this way, we'll all go down on the 50th, and we'll all have a grand time, and, like, that's why we do it. And I said, oh, do you think they'll make it look like a birthday cake? I was there for the 25th, and I loved it. He said, you might have been the only one. I thought that was, I mean, keep in mind, that was 95, so I was 9 years old.
Okay, that explains it. But you think of the person that, you know, has come from some foreign land, paid major, major big bucks, and they're confronted with this birthday cake castle.
My question was that castle gluten-free, though, or that big cake?
I was that little, I didn't know that I wouldn't have been able to eat the cake. I have a lot of pictures of me walking around eating Mickey Pops, which are gluten-free. But, oh, yeah, that was a scary thing to find out. Like, will I be able to eat in Disney World? Because I love all their food, and then they were very accommodating. But Disney World is everything to me. I went when I was 6, and about a month later, I do think that maybe it was because it was such a magical experience. And then, unfortunately, about a month later, while I was still on the high of that, we lost my uncle. He passed away unexpectedly. And so to go, I guess, from this euphoria to then this unexpected just sadness, it probably made the good of Disney good, but more than it had already been. But it's like a drug hit. It really is. Where do you want to go as a graduation present? I want to go to Disney World. Well, what are you going to do? You got to get out of the winter this year. Where do you want to go? I'm going to Disney World again. Will you ever get tired of it? No, I don't. Well, but do they have any new rides? No, but I'm going to ride the ones I love. You know, there's always a new show. There's always a new experience. At the end of the day, if you go on the safari, it's never the same thing.
Okay, have you ever been to Disneyland?
No. When I worked for the company, I did think about it. But I've been told that it's like a smaller version of the Magic Kingdom. It has some smaller stuff, but if you've been spoiled by Disney World, it might not be as an amazing experience as you imagined it to be.
Don't get me started.
You just hit the hot topic there, Alyssa. That's a hot topic for Sheila. Sheila loves Disneyland.
Oh, it's highly debated.
Yeah.
And I can't, I'm not an informed opinion on it. I can't, people have said to me, it's a better trip to go to Disney World, but you have to go to Disneyland because it feels different because Walt walked there.
Exactly.
And that's true. And if I was ever anywhere close to it, I wouldn't hesitate to go there. But it's just that, is it worth giving up what used to be the yearly trip?
I will
at some point in my life hopefully go to Disneyland.
I know definitely gonna go, and you're gonna really enjoy it. You know, it's, you really can't compare what it's really not a fair comparison, but on its own merit, it is a beautiful place, and it's the original place, and I know for sure that you and Laura and your mom or whoever are going to definitely go. I mean, and you're going to enjoy it. It's a lovely place, and maybe we will all meet Sheila there, and Sheila will give us a tour. What do you think, Sheila?
I'll wear my plaid skirt even.
That's amazing.
Alyssa, I had a question for you, and I don't remember what you had. For those who don't know, in the Disney store, we would always put our favorite character on the name tag as opposed to where we came from. And I don't recall what character you had on your name tag.
Figment.
Figment. How could I forget that? Figment. Wow. Because for me, it was Captain America, but I couldn't remember. Yeah. What about Lore? What did she have on hers?
Tigger, and she might have changed it up. or maybe it was always Ticker. It was always Ticker.
Okay. I could not remember who you had on the name tag.
I had Figment, and it was funny because nobody knew who he was a lot of the time.
Almost nobody.
Almost nobody knew. Who's Figment? What movie is he in? I don't think he's in a movie. When you leave the Disney company, you are supposed to turn in all things. And our badges were magnetic. And because I originally left due to an injury and was planning on going back, I continued to, they said, hold on to the magnetic badge, just given everything else, because it's, then we wouldn't have to get a new one when I went back. And then, unfortunately, my knee injury was still not okay, and they had to say, well, you know, we can't hold the position anymore, so I continued to have all the perks, and they had to cut it after a while, but they never wanted the badge back, so it's on my refrigerator.
That's perfect. I mean, that's a great, no, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's part of your magic and part of the history.
My name.
Yeah, your name and your character. Did you like when Disney went to the, because we had different costumes originally when we started, and then we went to the blue vest and the blue pants. Did you like that one better than the plaid one that when you originally hired?
When I was originally hired, we were in that one size fits all navy cargo shirt with the, not cargo, polo shirt and the khaki pants.
Yes.
And my pants were ripped, but we were getting the Navy uniforms, so they were not replaced. So I had to wear leggings under them, which is fine because it was cold. but they were one size fits all shirts. I was a bit heavier then. I'm 100 pounds and 5 foot tall. And it was a shirt that also fit, you know, a 280-pound, 6-foot man. It was, I was swimming in it, and it had to be tucked in. But it was a bit cold, and it was roomy, and I loved when we got the vest and the, we had a choice, well, females had a choice between a tie, a bow tie, and a scarf, kerchief. And I believe the males obviously didn't have the scarf, but other than that. And I was so excited. I thought it was so cute. And obviously you have two, or you have one, unless you purchase more. And it's not breathable. And you have the same one now for 3 years. It's a little less. But I thought that one looked much more professional, very Disney. It reminded me of something you would actually see in the park.
Yeah, I was going to say, those second costumes, the ones that they're still, I believe, currently wearing, they're actually designed by, I believe it's Banana Republic, actually designed those.
We had Stella McCarthy dresses for Maleficent, remember?
Right, I remember that.
Were they blue?
So they were very well done. They were extremely well done.
No, they're
blue,
said...
navy blue.
Hang on. Did you say Stella McCartney?
Stella McCartney, the designer.
Yeah, because she just designed Minnie's new blue outfit. Everyone's saying looking like pajamas.
They were this beautiful gown. And I think, I don't remember. I believe there was like a off violet one that was supposed to be Maleficent. And then there was a gold one that was Aurora, and a blue one that was Aurora, I believe. And they were Stella McCartney line prices when they started out. So they were a big price. So not a lot of people bought them. But there was a blue one, but there was the gold one was beautiful, the Maleficent one. I mean, if I had $700 and it came in my size, I probably would have wanted it. And yeah. It came in a little case, and it was very fancy. And then I was actually there when Stella came, and I, before the, I don't know if she was having a meeting there or she came in just to talk to them for some reason, but I was there at the register and checking out. And right before, one of our managers said to me, that's like three down the line. That's Stella McCartney. I hope she comes to you because so-and-so isn't still magical. So make sure if you get her, be magical. Okay. Oh. So I get her and she says to me, can I have your opinion? And that's the only reason I knew it was Stella McCartney. I wouldn't be able to pick her out of a lineup. And she says to me, can I ask your opinion? These shirts are 2 for whatever, and I'm getting this one. But which one of these two do you think would be a good gift for my dad? He's in his 70s, and in my head, I'm going, your dad's a Beatle?
Oh, my God.
I'm just going to pick the Disney shirt that Paul McCartney's going to wear. So I said, well, and I'm trying to play it like, because you want people to feel it, because they are people. They're just regular people like you and I. But I was like, well, for my dad, who's almost 70, I would get the grumpy one because he's a grumpy guy. But, you know, I like whatever that is. Myself, I think it's funny. So I guess it's more based on how you think of your dad's personality. And she goes, you know what? I'll buy myself another one and I'll just get both for him.
Oh my gosh. Wow. What a great story.
I know. We had, because it was the middle of Times Square, we would have random celebrity sightings. Javier Bardem, who's up for the Oscars. For the Lucy and Desi
right.
movie.
Michael C. Hall used to come in as well.
Yeah, because he was in the play next door.
Yes.
It was fun.
It's interesting hearing these stories coming out. Unfortunately, we are going to have to... you are going to have to stop winding down.
Well, Alyssa, it was lovely having you on the program, on the podcast. Oh. You're a lovely guest. And we, Sheila and I both want to thank you for being on and sharing. Once again, your book is called A Shop Girl's Tale. Listeners, go out and buy that book. It's wonderful.
And it's under my full name. It's A Shop Girl's Tale. And it's under Alyssa Gabrielle Donahue, just a little product placement. And the Alyssa is spelled E-L-I-S-A, not the normal assumption.
And that is lovely, Alyssa. We're going to have you back. We briefly touched upon how you have to eat at Disney and the gluten-free. We think it'd be amazing to have a show dedicated to that. And we'd like to extend an invitation right here and right now. Would you like to come back on the show and do a show with us?
I would love to talk about the specialty diets, because oftentimes if you have one, you are aware of all of the others. Like, I've gone to restaurants where they'll say, we don't have a lot of gluten-free options, but we have a lot of diabetic-friendly. And down there at such and such a place, they would be more willing to give you more options. So I do sort of know the specialty dining issue.
Great.
Excellent. That's fantastic. Well, we want to thank you for that. And we want to thank you for joining us tonight on Monorail Tales. And so for now, we're going to be signing off. Time is up. And we're going to be getting back together with you again. I want to thank you once again for joining us. And I want to thank the listeners for tuning into us tonight. And Sheila, you're a lovely co-host. And Alyssa, you've been a magnificent guest. And on that note...
Thank you both for having me.
It's our pleasure. And on that note, listeners, Alyssa, Sheila, I want to say goodnight to everyone. Until the next time.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Switch on the sky and the stars glow for you. Go see the world, 'cause it's all so